क्वेश्चन फ्रॉम मयूर जी प्रभु. इवन दो मेनी साइंटिस्ट थियोरेटिकल फिजिस्ट लाइक मिशिओ काकू स्टीफन हॉकिंग हैव नो रेशनल आंसर एज टू हाउ द यूनिवर्स केम आउट ऑफ अ बिग बैंग आउट ऑफ नथिंग एंड काकू ऑल्सो एडमिटेड दैट व्हेन वी साइंटिस्ट कैन नॉट एक्सप्लेन समथिंग व्हेन वी वॉन्ट टू से आई डोंट नो वी टेक द शेल्टर ऑफ अ सिंगुलैरिटी. They actually have no clue as to where the singularity came from or how it can exist. But still they like to believe that there may have been a singularity and it could have come out of nothing. Is this their rascaldom? Is this why Srila Prabhupada called material scientists rascals? How can we refute this idea totally if anyone puts it before us? Is there an article which gives strong arguments as to how the singularity is bogus? Answer. Actually, in the history of science as well as philosophy, one of the strongest arguments for the existence of God is what is known as the cosmological argument. Normally, Srila Prabhupada used the design argument, that we see evidences of intricately arranged things in this world, and they cannot have come by chance. So, that is one argument, design argument. The cosmological argument is that the cosmos has to have come from somewhere. So we have no experience of something coming from nothing. So if we don't have any experience of anything coming from nothing, then how can we say that everything has come from nothing? And this argument, scientists have tried to refute in various ways. Now, when we use the word scientists over here, we need to differentiate between materialist scientists and scientists in general. So, there are many scientists who do not necessarily disbelieve in God, although they may not profess their belief in God openly either. So, science in general has this idea that as soon as we bring a supernatural explanation within science, then scientific progress is stopped. We can no longer move forward in explanations. And that is why, in general, they try to avoid bringing in any supernatural factors. So, for example, scientists say that if in the past, when the Black Plague was there, people believed that the plague was caused by some ghosts infecting people. Now, if the plague is caused by ghosts and the ghosts are supernatural, and nothing that science can do about it. So scientists refused to believe that the ghosts caused the plagues, and then they found out it was caused by some germs. And when the germs were detected, understood and counteracted, then the disease was cured. So in general, science in modern society is not just a search for knowledge, it is also a search for control. That's why a search for knowledge would be more in goodness, a search for control is more in passion. And in general, scientists try to understand everything in material terms, by which if they can understand the material mechanism of the working of something, then they can duplicate it or manipulate it, and if required, completely alter it, stop it also. That's their hope. So, certainly in the world we see that material effects have material causes. So that's why when scientists come to the point of the beginning of the universe, at that time they try to find out, okay, this material existence that is there, all the universe that we see around us, if we say it has come from God, then we are bringing something supernatural into science, and that they feel will be a defeat of science, and that's why they do everything that is possible to avoid the supernatural element. And their idea is that let us try as much as possible to come up with any explanation other than the supernatural. So initially many scientists championed what was at that time known as something like a steady state theory. That means the universe was always the way it is now. So if the universe itself is eternal, then there is no need for any creator. Then the universe has no beginning and it does not require a beginner, it does not require a creator. Then when scientists started detecting in the cosmic background radiation, that was a radiation that they found, whichever direction they found, they directed their scopes. And that finding, as well as some other findings, led to the conclusion that actually this was the echo of a original, of a big bang that had happened at the start of the universe, a gigantic explosion that set off the movement of the universe, set off the creation of the universe. And also they found that the galaxy is expanding. So if it is expanding, then it must have had a beginning at some time. And from where it is expanding onwards. So these two set of strong evidences, the cosmic background noise or echo, and the expansion of the universes, more or less drowned the steady state theory. And then what remained was the Big Bang theory. So in the 1980s, when the Big Bang theory became more or less widely accepted, so many scientists felt that it was like proving the existence of God. It is like looking at God in the face. Because if the universe has a beginning, then it needs a beginner. So, and naturally that beginner has to be God. But then the problem with this was, again, science didn't want to bring in a non-material element within it, because scientists feel that non-material elements are not something which we can control with our own abilities. So then they tried to come up with the idea of matter and antimatter and a quantum mechanical vacuum from which both are exploding, from which both emerge. And normally scientists have detected some form of antimatter, but this antimatter exists for fractions of moments, for a very very small time, and it is of a very microscopic mass in general. But somehow they claim that from that observation of small microscopic particles, less than microscopic particles, which exists for fractions of moments, they have concluded this whole universe has also come out, and somehow it has existed on. And that is how they try to avoid the bringing in the any supernatural or divine element into the universe. So now, after that, scientists found that actually from the explosion of the Big Bang to get to the universe as we see it now requires a huge amount of remarkably delicate and precise arrangements. So they found that actually, if, just I'll give up two examples over here, if the universe had been exploding at a pace expanding after the explosion at a pace faster than what it is exploding now, you know, it would just, all the matter within it would have just been thrown apart and it would have gone into a dense cloud, uniformly distributed. And initially a dense cloud, but it would become a very rarefied cloud over a period of time. No atom, no electrons would have formed, no atoms, and ultimately no planets and no life. On the other hand, if the expansion rate of the universe had been lesser than what it is, then the universe would have collapsed into itself, and again, there would have been no life. The situation is like somebody throwing a ball from the bottom of a well upwards. Now, if the ball is thrown with a lot of velocity, it will fall outside the well. If it is thrown with less velocity, it will fall back inside the well, or rather with less force. But imagine that the ball is thrown in such a way that it comes and rests on the sill of the well, neither going outside nor going inside. That would require throwing the ball out with a very precisely controlled force. So the situation of the expansion of the universe is something like that. that it has to, the expansion has to happen at a precise rate. So similarly, there are many other factors, all of which are called as the fine tuning of the universe. So the fine tuning of the universe means the parameters that led to the development of the universe according to the Big Bang theory also require extremely precise and narrow values. If those values had changed, the universe would not have been possible. So there is an article, How Everything Began, that briefly talks about this on the site. But beyond that, so then scientists found out this probability is so low that we cannot attribute it to chance. And so then they came up with the idea of a parallel universe. Said, okay, whatever be the low probability, if the probability is 1 in billion, then there might be billion parallel universes. And therefore, actually, it happened in this universe. So, in this way, no matter how low the probability, that probability can be dealt with by saying that it just happened in this particular universe. There are as many universes as there is as probability requires. After all, nothing is required to postulate the universes. No expense is required. And there is no theoretical possibility also, what to speak of experimental possibility, of actually empirically demonstrating the universes. So this whole concept of parallel universes actually fits more the realm of science fiction than science. And as science started going more and more into that direction, where somehow they try to deny God coming into the picture, so currently the main theory is that there are many parallel universes, and whatever be the low probability, all of it is possible because there are so many universes. So yes, we need to understand the concern of scientists. Scientists often feel that bringing in supernatural explanations will be a progress stopper, that it will prevent us from doing our research. But that is not necessarily so, because suppose a person is found dead with a knife in his stomach in a room. Then by observing the way the knife has entered the room, forensic investigators can find out whether the knife entry into the stomach was accidental or was intentional. Means, was it that the person died in an accident or there was an intention over there? Now, if they ascribe the murder to a non-natural cause, that means it was not just the knife fell on the stomach and the person died, but somebody pushed the knife into the stomach, that does not necessarily lead to the stopping of knowledge. That is another way of knowledge. That is a significant development in the line of investigation for that purpose, to find out. So, intelligent causes are not necessarily unscientific. In archaeology, when scientists uncover some stone, at that time they may try to find out, does this stone have the marking on the stone, do they indicate human influence or are they natural influence? So they do discern it this way, that okay, this particular design that is there over here indicates natural human influence. It's possible by natural forces, but this particular design is not possible by natural forces. It requires some human intelligence to make an intricate tattoo or an intricate mark like this. So that is also an advancement of knowledge. So now, similarly, if within nature we find intelligent causes, then why not accept them? So, as of now, science is sort of monopolized by materialistic paradigm, whereas scientists feel that science needs to be equated with material investigation. But that is not a necessary precondition for science. Actually, science can, if there is a set of observations, if there is a systematic theory, if there is the possibility of experiment, and if there is a repeatability of the results, then that can in principle be called scientific. So if as intelligent devotees, especially those who are scientifically educated, can give more and more scientific presentations of Krishna consciousness and show how, actually speaking, this is not just a belief system. Okay, it's called like as if the magic wand created everything. This can also lead to the progress of human knowledge, that it can deepen our understanding. If you understand this point, that science doesn't necessarily have to be materialistic. Science can look for non-natural causes, and the discovery of non-natural causes is also a progress in knowledge for human beings. You know, science means one should be open-minded. So open-minded means investigate all possible explanations, including the explanation that there could be a non-natural, a divine cause of something. So therefore, if spirituality is presented not just as a belief system, but as a systematic, coherent, logical science, then scientists will not feel that science is threatened by expanding it to the non-material realm. And most of the science that the world knows today has grown in the West. And in the West, science has only encountered the Abrahamic religions, primarily Christianity. And with all due respect to those religious traditions, there is not much of a experiential, systematic process of sadhana or deep intellectual reflection within those traditions. So because of that, to some extent, science perceives that religion is mostly a faith-based belief system that is non-verifiable, non-repeatable, and that just makes supernatural claims a dime a dozen to explain away phenomena that could be explained by material means. So, on the other hand, the Vedic spirituality is not just a belief system, but it's a system for experience and transformation. So when we present Krishna consciousness systematically and scientifically according to our capacities, then we will be able to allay the concerns of the scientists that expanding science to the realm of spirit, to include non-material realms, is not necessarily a defeat of science or an abandonment of the scientific spirit to just give in to naive belief systems, but it is also an expansion of human knowledge. So if the evidence in the universe indicates that the universe is precisely tuned and that there are no possible evidences for parallel universes, then it stands to reason that this universe has to come from an intelligent source. That intelligent source is God. So slowly but surely, this paradigm will penetrate into science, but we as devotees can do our part in ensuring the intellectual penetration of the non-materialist paradigm within science. And in general, we don't have to resort to name-calling like rascals to scientists. Srila Prabhupada used that sort of words primarily with his devotees, with his disciples in morning walks. We will not find this kind of words used by Srila Prabhupada in his purports, generally speaking. And he considered his purports to be his most important contribution. And he trained Bhakti Sarvadhamma Maharaj that you should be polite and gentlemanly with the scientists. I can use words like rascals, but they cannot. But you should not. So, rather than we calling them names and they calling us names, we will call them rascals and fools, and they will call us sentimentalists and fanatics, whatever. And no rational discussion will be possible. But if we understand their concerns are twofold, that science should be able to find out material explanations for all material causes, and bringing in that non-material causes means that we just have to accept religious belief systems that are not verifiable, that are not repeatable, and that often make claims that fly in the face of scientific evidence. So for example, many Christians claim that the earth is 6,000 years old, and many scientists fear that Once we bring God into the picture, soon after that we will have to start accepting that the earth is 6,000 years old. And this is something which is scientifically entirely indefensible. So we have to understand the concerns of the scientists and address that. That just because we bring a non-material paradigm into science doesn't mean that one has to abandon scientific rigor. But one has to use the scientific rigor to go wherever the evidence is taken. And if that evidence takes one towards a non-material paradigm, then why not? That is also an advancement of knowledge. So therefore, as devotees, well, let us be objective. At the same time, let us be intelligent and scientifically well-tuned so that we can present Krishna consciousness in a way that is faithful to our tradition. At the same time, it is sensitive to the concerns of the scientific community. And then we can help to expand the boundaries of science to include the non-material or the spiritual realm. Thank you.